Session number 17625, William Glaister, Reel 4.
Mr. Glaister, Reel 4. Who was commanding the battalion in the early weeks of the war?
Well, I couldn't give a name at this particular time because I forgot. But I know, well, Mr. Bruce, and there was Mr. Johnson and John Stone. I can't even remember the MTO's name. And I was an MT NCO. I can't remember his name, no.
When did you become the MT NCO?
Lumpen Park Stables.
The officers you mentioned, what were they like?
They were good officers. Young, like myself, and like the rest of the people, but dedicated, I suppose. Mr. Bruce was a bit of a twerp, like, but
in what sense would you
call? Well, he was a more of a laugh than anything. His old man was a bank manager in Washington.
Do you know the background of the other two?
No, I don't know the background. But they were fairly officers. They seemed to know what they were doing.
Do you recall any of the NCOs that you were coming into contact with?
A big one?
Do you recall any of the NCOs you're coming into contact with?
Well, Sergeant Major Lawton. The RSM at that particular time. I forget his name now, but
you must have had platoons and sections all over the town, barracked in wherever they were, billeted in wherever they were.
Well, there was some station in the street, some station in the Empire Ballroom, and some station at Lumpen Park Stable. Well, I was transferred to Lumpen Park Stables, so I was billeted there.
What date was this?
Well, it was in the early 40s, you know, when I left the ballroom.
And were you moved specifically, NCO, to Lambton? Did you go there and take that task up straight away?
No. No, I was just an ordinary NCO at the time.
Where were you billeted?
In the stables itself.
Were they comfortable?
Rough. But beggars can't be choosers.
Again, were you lying on the floor?
Mattresses, palliasses.
What were you doing there?
Well, just general duties. Training, route marches, different, just general duties.
Were you doing any training on field craft?
Yeah, you did the odd exercise, but you did the night schemes, the day schemes.
What may they entail?
Well, would be on a night scheme, you would probably be attacking some other platoon or something. You know, they would be regarded as the enemy, and you would be there to attack them and use your tactics, various tactics to get the upper hand.
Can you mention some of the tactics that you might use?
Well, silence was the main thing. You know, you had to be very quiet if you were approaching them. You used to crawl and creep around various objects.
It wasn't First World War in a line going forward.
Oh, no. No, different tactics altogether.
The transport that you were getting at this stage, what were you getting?
Well, I had the Morris 3000 weights. We had the Jeeps.
Had you Jeeps this early?
Not Jeeps. They were sort of a Land Rover.
Had you carriers?
Yeah, we had a couple of carriers, yeah.
Was this a battalion transport or company transport?
Company. Yeah.
What would you have? What specific tasks would the transport do in a company?
Well, you'd probably ferry troops to various parts for exercises, drop them, and then return, and then probably go back the next day to a certain area and pick them up and bring them back to camp.
Would you have enough transport literally to lift a whole company?
Oh, yes, aye. But it would be various types of transport, not troop carriers or anything like that. It would just be the ordinary Morris 3000 weight, whatever, you know.
Did the officer of the company, commanding officer, did he have his own vehicle?
Oh, yes, aye. And his own driver.
Motorcycles, were they part of the company?
Yes, yeah. Dispatch riders. Dunars, or Diaz, as we call them.
Would there be a signal truck?
Not with me, not at Lampen Park. But you had your signals there. No, there'll be signal trucks at the drill hole.
That'd be battalion level.
Yeah, that'll be. But you had your signalist who used to operate the radios and what have you.
You say you became the MT NCO. Why did they choose you for that?
Well, because I was a driver, originally, you see.
You'd learned to drive, hadn't
you?
Oh,
yeah. Yeah.
What were the duties of the MT NCO?
Well, you used to have your vehicle inspections. And you used to make sure the vehicles were clean. Drivers were aware of what was happening and when it was happening, and they present the vehicles ready for the inspection.
So there was a lot of cleaning and polishing.
Oh, yeah, it was all bullshit.
Who commanded the MTO?
Commanding officer.
There wasn't an MTO officer responsible to the commanding officer?
Well, he was responsible to the commanding officer, but he was in charge of the transport.
Do you remember your MTO officer?
I can't think of his name.
And were you responsible to him for the turnout and the fitness of the unit?
Yeah, he was the man. We had a liaison with. He would liaise with us and say, right, well, I want such and such a vehicle on inspection tomorrow. And we would have to make sure that vehicle was clean and whatever, you know, ready for his inspection. Well, he might inspect all the transport.
Did you have responsibility over the fitters that looked after the transport?
No.
That was another...
That was another unit. Yeah, they were Commander Remy. They were like sort of seconded to us. You had your Remy personnel who were responsible for repairing the transport and doing the fitting side of the job.
Were they at battalion level? Complete unit of their own in the battalion?
No, they were a corps.
Did the battalion have its own immediate fitters, you might say? For
no, but they did have the odd one who knew a little bit about the fitting side of a job, and he would be employed. But he would come under the Reeby people. You know, if they said something, what they said was law.
How many men would be in the MT section?
I'd say probably about 20 to 30.
And at the head you'd have your MT officer?
Yeah.
Then did you have a higher ranking NCO than yourself?
Oh yes. Yeah, he had the MT sergeant.
Do you recall who he was?
I cannot. No.
And then you'll be one of the MT corporals, is that right?
Yeah.
Of course, you're private.
Privates underneath.
Did you have to have, you say you were a driver, presumably you didn't have any engine mechanical knowledge of your own?
No, just purely a driver.
And as you say, you would have particular duties with the transport, wherever they were needed.
Yeah. We would have to detail the drivers to do various tasks or jobs. Ensure that the jobs was carried out properly.
Were the vehicles reliable?
Oh, yes. Yeah, I would say they were pretty reliable, yeah. Of course, that's the reason why we had Remy people attached, to ensure that they were...
Were they diesel or petrol?
Petrol. Mm-hmm.
On manoeuvres, no doubt, and schemes, you would have to be out supporting the various units.
Not various units. You're out there to look after your own unit. They would each own transport, you see.
Were you trained to protect your transport against an airstrike? Do you have any kind of brands on?
No, just camouflage. Put a camouflage nets over the transport.
And each vehicle had its camouflage net?
Oh, yeah.
If you're going out on a scheme or a manoeuvre, what would you be carrying in the vehicle? I mean, to keep it going, in fact. You'd have your camouflage net, which you've mentioned.
Yeah. The jerry can of petrol, spare petrol. Depending on the terrain, you carry the channels for the vehicles.
For the wheels.
For the wheels, yeah. But they were strapped on the side of the vehicles.
And presumably all this equipment, if you can call it that, would be inspected to see that it was there.
Oh, yeah. Every vehicle was... When it went out on an exercise, it was inspected to ensure that it was correct. Yeah, all right.
This was the time of blackout and dark nights, of course. Presumably you did night driving exercises.
Yeah.
What would that entail?
Well, yeah, your headlights was dimmed. You know, there was just sufficient light to let you know that it was a vehicle. But it didn't shine for miles ahead because of the blackout restrictions, you see. It was limited.
Did the vehicle have any kind of indicator or light, tiny though it may be, on the back which the vehicle behind could pick up on and guide itself with?
Oh, you had your red lights on the back of the vehicle. Yeah.
There must have been pretty hairy driving in the blackout with so little headlights.
Well, it was a strain on the eyes. Very hard. It was all concentration, you know. You couldn't sort of relax, or you couldn't sit and think about things as you were driving along. You had to concentrate on what you were doing. Unless you were in trouble.
The 8th Battalion itself had gone to France by now,
yeah.
Say. You missed it.
Yes, I went to the 11th Battalion.
At what point did this happen? Was it before Dunkirk or early in the year?
No, it was after Dunkirk.
You were still with in effect in the depot?
Well, I was in hospital. When I came out, I had to go to Bransford.
Oh, I see. How did you hurt your leg?
Football. And I had an operation, had a cartilage removed.
So when did that happen?
Oh, dear me. I was in hospital, I know, when the 8th Battalion went to France.
And that would be in the January of 1940, at the end of January 1940. They went to France.
Yeah, well, it was early January. Yeah, it was early February. Early 40.
Mm-hmm. And you were in hospital then, recovering
from
this operation.
Yeah, and then when I came out, I was put into the 11th Battalion. Well, I went to the depot first. And then from there, sent to the 11th Battalion, who were in Devon at the time.
Moving to the depot, did you know that you were going to be moved somewhere?
Oh, I knew I would have to go from the depot to some unit, but I didn't know which unit it would be.
How did you feel about the whole situation?
Well, I thought, well, I've missed France. I might as well make the best of it, and I just went to the 11th Battalion. That's where I was sent to.
What was the depot like?
Oh, I met all sorts of characters there. Yeah. Bill Rutherford, the Tottenham manager in right half. Sidlow, the Welsh international goalkeeper. Tommy Rutherford played in goal for Ashington, Charlie Curry, the boxer, Joe Lee, the boxer, and Jack Lee was from Concert, but he boxed under Jack Lee. Joe Lee was his proper name. I met a lot of people there. Johnny Taylor was the ABA boxing champion.
These permanent staff?
Yeah. Physical training instructors.
And what were you put into when you got to the depot?
Well, I was just putting it to, I think it was H Company. Pendon being posted to the 11th.
Where were you billeted?
Brunsmith.
Well, in the castle or?
No, in Brunsmith Camp.
The camp had been built.
Yeah. Yeah, the castle was further
was
back.
Was it particularly regimental and strict?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, there was a mirror outside the guard room. And you just have to check yourself in the mirror before you went out. Otherwise, you were in trouble. And if the guard commander, he may call you in to inspect you and he'd say, that's not right. Get away back and get it done before you come out.
Did you still have your stripe?
Yeah. Oh,
you
yeah.
Took that away.
No. No.
Have you any other memories of the depot itself?
Yeah, I came back to the depot in 1941. Back end of 1941. And the same lads was there. And I joined the PT staff myself. And then on the January the 9th, 1942, I sailed for the Middle East.
The depot, was it purely Durham Light Infantry?
No.
Was it Duke of Wellington's that were there?
Yes, Duke of Wellington's. They were there.
This very first occasion that you went there, when you were recovered from your leg injury, how long were you there?
Oh, not very long. Just, if it was a fortnight, I would be here at the most.
And in that fortnight, were you drilling and whatever to keep yourselves occupied?
You got your routine drills, etc., you know. And then I was posted to Devon to join the 11th Battalion.
Was this after Dunkirk now?
Yes.
Do you recall, I know you weren't there, but do you recall Dunkirk and its effects when it happened?
No. No, I don't know nothing about Dunkirk. In fact, I was surprised when the 8th Battalion had gone to Dunkirk, you know. I was a bit disappointed, really, because I knew them in the 8th Battalion and I would like to have stayed with them. But that's part of life.
So you went down to Dorset?
Not Dorset, Devon.
Devon. You went down to Devon. Do you recall the date?
No. No.
Summer, that kind of time, 1940?
I would say summertime.
Yeah. What were the 11th Battalion doing down there?
Well, funny enough, they were kitted out for Iceland, and we'd been playing cards on a Saturday afternoon, and I'd broke the school and went into town, and the quartermaster's batman was there, and he had a couple of navy chaps with him in the bar, and he said there were some lucky so-and-sos. And I says, who are you calling the so-and-so? And he says, you. I says, right, outside. Well, we got to the doorway, and I thought, well, he's got two naval blokes there with him, and I was on my own. I'm going to have the first one on. So I broke his nose for him. Anyway, he went to the dance at night time, and who should be there? This chap. Walked back to camp with him, and I was in bed Sunday morning when the RSM came in, and two regimental policemen. Get ready. And I was put into the guard room. And I was charged with breaking a comrade's nose, you see, assault. And it was a court-martial job. Now I was in the guard room with little Lockery Wood and Tony Richardson. Tony Richardson was IC relief and Lockery Wood was one of the guard. Two friends of mine. Well, we're off, they said. I said, where are you going? They said, we're going to Yem. We haven't gone to Iceland. I said, well, you're not going to leave me here. So they opened the cell door. The three were scarred. And I was at home. And I said I was on leave. And my mother was keep asking us for my Russian card. And I said, oh, I'll give it in the morning. I haven't time. And the old man got wide. He says, hey. He says, get your bag back there and get away back to the devil. He realized what was, there was something wrong, you see. So I went back to the depot, and the colonel there, Jock Astard, he committed suicide. Well, he was a commanding officer, and I thought, oh, I'm getting away with this. He's a gentleman. 28 days detention to be spent in Hull, Hedden Road to Hull. So I went to Hull. It was a civilian jail accommodated by the military. And I was in there for, 21 days. I got 7 days remission.
Can we look at that whilst we're on with the subject of detention in an army prison, basically, wasn't it? How did they treat you?
Oh, just I suppose it's civilians. You know, it was very strict. You couldn't talk to people. You had to be very careful because if you were spotted talking to anyone, you lose your remission just like that. Yeah, very strict. And then you used to have to slop out. You know, just like
you're in cells.
Yeah.
Did you have to do everything at the double?
No. No, you got the exercise just to see.
It wasn't like the army detention camps. With
oh no!
Basically, you're trudging around at the double all the time.
No.
Brimsland like civilian prisoners, as you say.
Yeah, it was must have been based on something similar as a civilian jail.
How many to a cell?
Three.
Were you sleeping in bunks, sir?
Yeah.
Usual kind of civilian prison cell. There was the toilet facility in the cell itself.
No, you went out, or you had a chamber. You know, you used to have to do it, and then to slip out the next morning. After a certain time, you know, you never got out to go to the toilets. You had to do it inside, and then you slipped out the next morning, went back to your cell. Then you'd have your breakfast brought.
Brought to you?
Oh, yeah.
What might it be?
Well, depended.
Was it reasonable food?
Oh, it was reasonable food. Well, it had to be, otherwise you couldn't have stood up to the chores you had to do. You know, it was pretty hard. Anyway, I got out from there and came back, and I was posted to the 17th Battalion.
Can I, just before you leave there, you say this was staffed by the Army?
Yes.
Which regiment would they be from?
Well, Royal Military Police, different people, I think.
And what was the routine? You were given tasks to do?
Yeah, you were given a Dixie to clean or something, you know. It was all polish.
Were they particularly harsh? I mean, did they finish cleaning something and make you do it again and say it wasn't good enough?
Oh, yeah.
They
that's not good enough. You had to take it back and do it again. You know, but that was their way of treating you, you see.